And from high atop the cliffs of beautiful Bodega Bay, California, it's the HR Examiner Radio Show. We're brought to you by DICE, the career hub for technical people. And today, we're lucky enough to have Kelly Robinson sitting in with us. Kelly, as you may know, is the founder and currently the director of Broadbean in the Americas. He's a recruiter by trade and an entrepreneur at heart, and so we're going to talk with Kelly about the difference between the British and the English recruiting markets and what it's like to recruit technical people and what it's like to start a company in Europe and then come and start another adventure in the States. The hashtag is hashtag HRX. If you're following along and want to let people know about this, and so we're ready to go. Kelly, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you, John. Good morning, and thanks for inviting me along.
Yeah, it's really nice to hear your voice. So you're calling from beautiful Orange County, California, which is not really a lot like England. How's the change coming?
I'd say it's the polar opposite, in fact, actually, John. I'm not looking out at grey weather and rain. I'm actually looking out at blue sky and sunshine 300 days a year, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine the difference when you're in the UK. It's hard to imagine that there could be a place like that, isn't it?
Well, we have about 2 weeks of this a year in the UK, and it's one of the reasons why we drink so much in England. If we didn't, I think we'd all be totally depressed because it's just the grey the whole time.
I've rarely seen sunshine in my visits. So you started Broadbean after some time as a recruiter. How'd you get the idea to do that, and how'd that go?
Yeah, so, I mean, if you go right the way back to the original founding of Broadbean, we were a technical recruitment company. We were recruiting IT staff. This is right at the point where more and more job boards were starting to actually launch, and we were looking for a tool. We was actually using a tool that helped push the jobs around the internet, but we were looking for something that was a little bit quicker, a little bit more efficient, couldn't find anything. So obviously with my background in technical recruitment, we brought in a couple of contractors and started building what originally was going to be a tool for our recruitment business. You know, like most people, we built this basic tool. I showed it to a couple of friends that were in the recruitment industry at the time, and, you know, their advice was, you know, this looks like a bit of an interesting product. You should try and sell this. And so Broadbean was born, actually. It was born of a project name called the Firebean Project and swiftly changed to Broadbean. And then we launched the company back in 2000, 2001. It kind of since become all-consuming. All my involvement with recruitment agencies ceased fairly quickly. And, you know, we've been on a bit of a global journey ever since.
That's great. So you're owned these days by Evenbase, which is a subsidiary of the Daily Mail Group Trust.
Correct.
That must be quite an interesting change.
Yeah, it was a change, actually. I mean, it's been a while now. I mean, we was acquired by DMGT and Evenbase back in 2008. And, you know, part of the meeting of minds on that one was that we wanted to grow the business globally. Not only did they have the funding available to help us do that, and, you know, most business owners at some point consider maybe taking on board some investment or looking for a partner. But for us, DMGT was a you know, and latterly Evenbase was a fantastic partner because of their, you know, strategic involvement in the digital recruitment space. So that gave us the opportunity to take Broadbean global. And from their investment in 2008, we launched in the US in 2009. I moved here on Friday, March the 13th, 2009. We launched Australia in 2010. And, you know, we're consolidating those markets, but obviously the next push for us would be look at, you know, more wide stream in Asia and also in the Latin America region.
Oh, that's interesting. So what made you come to America first? Why didn't you go to some of those other places first?
Client demand. We had some customers that were asking us to roll them out in the States. One in particular, large staffing company. Let's say they're in the top five staffing companies in the world. And the original deal with them was they would buy our service or extend our service to be used in America, but we had to agree to provide an office and some people on the ground here within 12 months. So we signed the contract, and that was the start point to come to the States. And, you know, originally we were looking at, again, like most British people, the first thing you think about is, you know, move to New York or move East Coast. We looked at it and realized that if we moved out to the West Coast, that we could actually get, with two help desks, one in the UK and one in the US, we could actually get probably around about 18 hours a day coverage by linking the two together. So that was the decision. And, of course, once you start, you know, as a British person coming out to the States, once you hit California and you see the, you know, the weather and the environment, that was a, you know, huge attraction for us as well.
That's cool. So now you have seen up close British recruiting and American recruiting. Is there a difference between the two things?
Yeah, I think there is, actually. And I think it actually segues quite interestingly between corporate and staffing. Do you have a particular, do you want to talk about one or the other, or should we just cover both of them?
Why don't we do them both? Why don't we do it this way? Why don't we start with staffing, then talk a little bit about the differences in corporate, and then we'll start to narrow down to technical recruiting.
Okay, cool.
All right.
So for me, the first differences I saw, well, first and foremost, what you got to look at is that there's still much more recruiting done by staffing companies in the UK than there is here in the US. And I don't have the most recent numbers, but the last time I looked at reports, somewhere in the region of 62% of hires in the UK were made through staffing companies. And staffing companies typically in the UK work at a lower percentage. They tend to have absolute dominance of the job boards. They post an awful lot more job postings, so therefore their visibility is much greater. And there's just more of a cultural acceptance of, I need to hire somebody, let's call my local agent, or, you know, let's go through our preferred suppliers list and hire some people. Now, I'm not saying that's not changing, because it is, and I think they're starting to follow more of the US model, which is have internal recruiters working for your organization, working for your brand. But at the moment, it's still heavily dominated by staffing companies. And then when you actually get into the setup of a staffing company and you compare UK to US, one of the biggest differences that I saw in the UK, the recruiters are expected to both source candidates and clients. And the fundamental difference for me when I moved here was that in US staffing companies, there is generally a business development arm or a sales arm that goes and finds new prospective customers. And an actual recruitment group of people that sole purpose is just to fill jobs. So for me, there were two quite fundamental differences. I think in the US, companies, and we're now going on to the corporate side of it, but corporate employers, sorry, John.
No, that's exactly right. You don't even need me now, Kelly. Just keep going.
let me take a pause there for a moment. I thought you were going to ask me a question. I apologize. I was getting on my soapbox.
No. This is great. Let's move on because I think the real differences in the two markets are in the corporate world, right? So work is a little different in the staffing agencies, but geez, in the UK, something like 80% of recruiting is done by agencies, and in the States, it's in the 10 or 12% range. So that means that the corporate recruiter does a bunch of stuff in the States that isn't part of the deal in the UK. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the classic role of a corporate recruiter in the UK was one of managing a preferred list of vendors, managing the relationships with your agencies, driving your agencies to perform, maybe almost acting to a certain extent in a kind of procurement way in terms of making sure that the company's getting a bang for their buck in terms of what they're paying an agency. That's definitely changing, and that's starting to follow more the US model, which seems to be more of a staffing business wrapped up inside of a corporate entity where they've actually got people whose job it is just to post jobs. They've got people whose role it is just to actually source candidates, not just necessarily manage a suppliers listing.
So it actually is a pretty big difference between the two markets. So when you bring a business from one market to the other market, there must be some interesting adjustments you have to make, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for us, when we first launched here in the US, we assumed And I'm sure many American companies have made the same, not necessarily mistakes, but the same assumptions when moving to the UK. You think it's the same culture, you think it's the same language, you think things are done very much the same, and actually it's totally different. So when we came here, our system was built around the classic recruitment usage in the UK, where recruiters post an awful lot of jobs, they deal with a lot of responses. We've had to chop and change and tweak and kind of not reinvent, but customize our system to suit the work and the methodologies of the U.S. marketplace.
I think that's quite a learning, and a lot of it is pretty darn subtle. The distinctions are hard to see at first, I'd imagine, and so it must be really interesting to be running a software development operation in the space and trying to straddle those two views of the world, the American and British view of the world.
Yeah, and do you know the interesting thing, John? And I'll tell you a funny story in a second, but the interesting thing for me is one of the hardest things you can do as a software development company, and I'm sure there's an opportunity, and I've mentioned this many times before, is you try and find a language agency that can translate your system from British English to American English. It's just non-existent. And it is very different. I mean, in the UK, consistently, it's called a vacancy. So you refer to, we have a number of vacancies, and when I first started using that language in the US, people were remarking and saying, well, vacancies are what hotels have, they're not jobs.
Right.
So just one word can throw a whole system out. People look at it and go, well, what's a vacancy? That doesn't exist in our company, we have jobs.
That's right.
So that was an interesting learning curve, and there's definitely an opportunity for somebody that can master the art of translating HR software systems from American English to British English and vice versa.
That's great. So is there a difference in the way that tech people are recruited between the two cultures?
No, I think underlying they're the same. I think, it's a bit of a contact sport. There's a combination of, if you think about it, I like to, and we specialize in helping companies find people, whether that's a staffing company or a corporate recruiter. There really is only actually four ways to hire people, and those four ways, in my opinion, are some form of advert or commercial. You know, used to be an advert in the paper for $10,000, then it was a job posting, now it might be a social conversation, but it's an advert that attracts somebody to come and apply. The other method is to ask for a referral. Who do we know that can do this job? We can actually go out and search somebody, and that used to be a skill primarily aimed at a headhunter, but now most corporate recruiters can get access to tens of millions of resumes, from LinkedIn to Dice and Monster, depending on what you're recruiting for. And the final thing is to use an agency. So I actually don't think those four ways to hire people have really changed. The methodologies within those parts have changed, but the broad brush concept of it's either an advert, it's a search, it's a referral, or you can use the specialist of an agency haven't really changed that much. What I see in the UK is a lot more job postings, a lot more actually going out and meeting people, a lot of networking events. Again, it's a much smaller country, so I guess you probably get the similar, when you look at the main cities in the U.S., there's probably a similar approach going on there as well.
I think that's right. I think that's one of the things that surprises people about the United States is it really isn't a single culture, but it's maybe as many as 400 discrete cultures that are each the size of a small city. So if you're looking for hard to get technical people, is job posting the right way to do that, or is that something that's better done by having an agency go after? Do you have an opinion about that?
Yeah, I do. I think it's a combination. And again, it really depends on what you're looking for. But I think it's a combination of all of them. I think, to a certain extent, there is always going to be a percentage of people that don't want to be sourced that will come and apply for your job, that they will look. And they may receive a job by email. They may go and look on their favorite job board. They may find it somewhere else. But at some point, they'll see an advert that says, Company X is looking for Y. And they may choose to go and apply for that. There's an attraction there, obviously, if it's a direct advert from a corporate employer. I think, from a hiring manager standpoint, if you've got somebody in your local community that's a recruitment company that specializes in a certain thing you're looking for, you know, you need a pole developer or a Java specialist, then you can go to that agency. And really what you're doing is that agency is still trawling the database, is still writing the job postings, but essentially they're just going to take that whole workload for you. So I think it depends on what your preferences are and also what your internal resources allow you to do.
Well, thanks. So I'm going to take a moment here and remind everybody that you're listening to the HR Examiner Radio Show. I'm your host, John Sumser, and we are brought to you by DICE, the career destination for tech people. We're talking today with Kelly Robinson, the CEO of Broadbean, and the hashtag is hashtag HRX, for those of you in the back channels of Twitter. So, Kelly, social media.
Yes.
Do you see there being a big change because of social media?
Do I see there being a big change in social media?
In recruiting.
Well, I mean, if you look at the stats, we did a poll of our customers. 65% of our clients last year used social media in one shape or form to actually successfully hire somebody. But actually, the question that was that they said, well, 89% said that they're going to intend to use it this year. So I think it's just become part of the norm.
Okay.
You know, as much as a job posting was, you actually want to see your adverts out there. You want to start a social conversation. I think there's some inspired recruiters doing some really interesting things with social media in very specialist and very niche areas, and they're making a huge success of it. I think as a medium to broadcast both your employer branding and your actual open jobs, that's being used as well. And I mean, we look at now at Broadbean, and we post, you know, over 20 million unique jobs a year now.
Wow.
By far the biggest increase has been pushing jobs out to Twitter and Facebook. Now, I wouldn't say that's necessarily social recruiting, but it's using that as a channel, and it comes into the concept of, you know, it's advertising your job. Somebody out there may actually find that and come and apply.
So do you have some advice for recruiters who want to try to use social media to do recruiting? I mean, I think there are some interesting ways to use social media for technical recruiting, and there are some really bad ways to do it. What do you think?
Well, I think a lot of things, actually. One of the things I will say, John, is that a lot of people that are much closer to social recruiting have got some really good ideas and some really good points to make about how you use social recruiting. I think in my sphere of expertise, what I would say and the advice I'd give to people is when you talk to a candidate, the art of actually writing a job posting or a job commercial or something that's going to attract a person to come and apply for the company seems to have been lost. What we do as an industry, and I think we've just got lazy, what we do as an industry is we take a job spec and we chuck that online and wonder why we don't get a ton of responses. If I could do one thing, I'd make recruiters think a little bit more about the job that they're trying to fill and actually position that in a, you know, in an accurate, maybe we could write the job a little bit more about what's the person actually going to be doing, what type of skills do we think we're going to need. We see, and you can go to any job board or any social media site at the moment and start searching for jobs, and what you're going to see is thousands and thousands of job specs as defined by an HR department. And I think there's a difference between a job spec and a commercial for a job, and I think we've lost that art. So if it was me, that's the one thing I'd change. I'd make people actually sit down and write about the job that they're trying to fill and understand it and actually make an effort to go and find somebody who can do that job. And as I've said before publicly, I'm a big proponent for, you know, hiring for ability rather than necessary hard skills.
Right. So I saw the best job ad of all time the other day. It was a full-page ad in the New York Times. And at the top of the ad was a cover letter that a kid had sent to somebody he met at a Smith & Wolensky restaurant. And the cover letter was about how he'd met this guy, and his grades weren't that hot, but he really wanted a job in the financial business, and this guy said he could help him. The ad was a letter to the kid who wrote the cover letter, and it said, "If those guys don't hire you, we will." And
fantastic.
Right? And you might learn how to value a company at Lehman Brothers. And working with Morgan Stanley might really get you good at figuring out portfolio management. But none of those people are going to be able to teach you how to quarter a steer. And you know, it was done so well that you know that the folks at the Smith & Wolensky Steakhouse in New York City are not going to have trouble getting the MBAs that they want for their management offices. So there's, when you see something that's great like that, I think it's really important to celebrate that. And my hat's off to the folks at Smith & Wolensky who did that. So
I think that's brilliant, John. And it, you know, gets to my point. I think even with a, you know, classified small job posting, I think you can just make it a little bit more interesting and just gain some, you know, gain some traction. And for me, that would be a thing that I would change. And I, on the flip side, I've seen the worst job ad this week that said C++ contractor required, and that was it. I mean, you know, I'm going to go and apply for that. I've spent years developing skills in C++ to become a contractor, and I'm going to reply to an ad that's not even, you know, a full sentence.
Yeah. So labor shortages. I'm starting to hear lots of stuff about labor shortages. Are you getting that too?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're talking to clients. I mean, I'll give you, last year we saw a 10.8% increase in jobs posted through our system. I didn't have time to pull the global numbers together, but certainly that goes to show you. But what's interesting there, and if you look at it, the average number of responses per job has come down.
Really?
Yes, absolutely. In our system, definitely it's come down. It's a third less than it was before. So we're seeing companies posting more jobs as a result of needing to find, you know, these extra people, this skill shortage. And we're actually seeing the number of people applying per job as dropping as a statistic. Plus also in conversations with our clients, we know that they're planning to hire more people. And I tell you what's interesting actually, John, I looked at the three areas in our system just a moment ago that we saw the biggest increase in jobs. The first one was engineering. The second one was IT, and that obviously bodes well for, you know, Dice and the people that are involved in this show. And the third one, which I thought was quite interesting, was people posting jobs to the purchasing, for procurement jobs and purchasing. So, you know, for me that's quite a good thing because it means companies are starting to spend money if they're hiring purchasing people, which means that if companies are growing, then hopefully a lot of effect in, you know, reducing unemployment.
That's great. You have a better eye than most people on the British market. Are there talent shortages popping up in England as well?
I mean the engineering is consistent across all of our regions, engineering and IT. And I think engineering stems from the fact that if you look at kind of college, you know, graduate output over the last decade, people have shied away a little bit from the traditional engineering sector because they wanted to focus on technology. And I mean, that's as we know, that's an aging sector, and it's in desperate need of you know, new, fresh graduates coming out with engineering disciplines to go into that industry. Particularly, that market is a very flexible workforce, so they desperately need people to go and do contracts around the world.
So I didn't prepare you for this, and it's okay if you want to pass on it, but I'd actually be really interested in your thoughts about hiring immigrants to do technical jobs. And so let me flesh that out a little bit. I think when I go across the borders from the United States to Canada or to someplace in Europe, what I find is it's friendlier on the other side of the border than it is on this side of the border, and that it seems just in general harder to get here than it used to be. And I'm of the opinion that that's bad. That's bad for the country. Not everybody shares that view. So how have you found that? And do you think that making it easier for technical people to get here is a good thing?
Well, I mean, certainly my experience with the UK before moving to the US was that at one point we had a huge recruitment drive out into Europe. And, you know, obviously as European states joined, then there was an immigration there. There was a huge technical immigration from different parts of the world. The good thing of that was it actually brought the skills and the expertise into the country that we needed at the time. During the time of the recession, there was definitely a tightening up of the ability to get work permits. So it got to the point where companies, maybe not huge employers, but certainly the kind of mid-range staffing companies and the mid-range employers that we were talking to, the red tape to actually employ somebody on a work visa was becoming more cost expensive, more comprehensive, and as a result, they just stopped doing it. And I'm assuming same happened in the US, is that at one point it was much easier. During the kind of economic downturn, things have actually tightened up, and it's just become a palaver or difficult for companies to go ahead and do that. So they'd reserve that type of hiring for very specialist roles that they just simply couldn't get here. Would you say that's the same? Is that symptomatic of what happened in the US?
I think it's the same, although I think we've gotten a little crazy about thinking about the borders here. For a number of reasons, the downturn was a big deal. The World Trade Center disaster was a big deal, and we've gotten less friendly in the States as the years have gone by. So
I mean, if you talk, I mean, you mentioned, you know, obviously looking at things regionally. I mean, let's take San Francisco, the kind of hotbed of you know, technical. Technical stuff in the U.S. I mean, you know, surely that part of the U.S., they can't survive without bringing in people from abroad. They just, I can't imagine they can churn out enough software people to support the needs there. I mean, do you have any sort of data or input on that?
I think there are a couple of different ways of looking at that, and the first is that there's a lot of energy put into specific contemporary skills, so it's really hard to find Ruby on Rails programmers in San Francisco. But it turns out that you can get a 15-year C++ veteran up to speed on Ruby on Rails in 90 days, and there's a bunch of those sorts of people sitting on the sidelines. So part of what's going on in the skill shortages in Silicon Valley is people are looking for very specific things, and when they don't find them, they stop, rather than widening the lens to see if they can get to the next layer of capability.
Interesting.
So it'd be interesting to have a conversation sometime in the future with you about how you make job descriptions. If you put a job ad out and it's interesting and it doesn't draw what you want it to draw, what are the things you need to do to open it up a little bit more so that you get something that's close? Because I think that's a big part of how you do great technical recruiting.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, from my sense is, you want to try and capture the essence of the company, maybe try and bring out their culture, maybe try and describe the position in terms of what the person's actually going to be doing. And I think you need to talk about the potential. One of the reasons people change jobs is future potential. And that very rarely seems to come across in any of the postings I've seen.
That's right. So I'm gonna wrap us up right here, Kelly. And thank you so much for coming on and giving us a window into cross-cultural technical recruiting, which is what we've been talking about today. Last words?
Well, thank you for giving me the time to come on and talk to you. Thank you to Animal for retweeting all of our comments over the past 25 minutes. And appreciate the time, John.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you, Animal. This is John Sumser, and you've been listening to the HR Examiner radio show. #HRX, and we've been brought to you by DICE. Thanks very much, everybody. Have a great day.